From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Donald Trump on Tuesday announced that he would be, quote, guarding our border with the military. Seated next to Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, the president said angrily, "We have very bad laws for our border, and we're going to be doing things militarily." It was the latest in a series of pronouncements over immigration coming from the president over the past few days. Even on Easter Sunday, surrounded by kids attending the White House's annual Easter egg roll, Trump addressed reporters about immigration and DACA. And a day earlier, Trump fired off a series of angry tweets about Mexico, border security, caravans at the border, and DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, seemingly out of nowhere. DACA is dead, he declared. And even though he was the one who had ended it, Trump said it was, quote, because the Democrats didn't care or act. And, quote, now everyone wants to get onto the DACA bandwagon. My guest is Juan Escalante, communications manager with America's Voice, a DACA recipient himself. He's also the immigration correspondent for this program. Welcome back to the show, Juan.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is what he has said. We have very bad laws for our border. We're going to be doing some things. I've been speaking with General Mattis. We're going to be doing things militarily, Mr. Trump said at the White House, seated next to the defense secretary. He said, until we can have a wall and proper security, we're going to be guarding our border with the military. That's a big step. We really haven't done that before, or certainly not very much before. I don't know if you have any comments on that, but it seems like Trump is inventing immigration law and policy by the seat of his pants every day.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is not the first time that we hear something, you know, oddly similar to what has been proposed in leaked memos in the early days of the Trump administration as of last year. You know, in the very beginning of the Trump administration, a memorandum was floated around essentially proposing that the National Guard be deployed from state borders. The governors authorized the National Guard to guard the border region of the United States in a company with, you know, it's alluring to the Mexican border. You know, these comments about that, and I'm seeing here them flash on my screen, is essentially not only extremely troubling, but also come at the heels of another proposal from the from Donald Trump about the Secretary of Defense and his agency to pay for the actual border wall now that Congress has finished up its budget and not authorized a penny for it. So it's unfortunate that we have to hear this from the Commander-in-Chief. I'm not really sure what it speaks out to the people, to the men and women who are serving our country and defending it day in and day out. But I got to tell you something. I hope that General Mattis really understands that he also wields some influence as member of the cabinet of Donald Trump to stand up to the president and say that this is not a good use of our resources and of the men and women who are pledging allegiance to this country and to make sure that they defend it with their own blood if needed. But unfortunately, you know, if it's yet to come. Who knows what the comments and the reactions of the Department of Defense may be at the end of the day. But I got to tell you, with the way that the Trump administration is handling its cabinet, it's definitely going to make a very interesting rest of the week to see what the response and the back and forth may be.
So it seemed to come out of nowhere. Trump on Saturday just firing off a bunch of angry tweets with very little context. Some speculated maybe it was because Robert Mueller's net was closing in around him and just one scandal after another, the Stormy Daniels thing, etc. And then news media started reporting that he had just basically met with a bunch of people on the Fox News payroll, and it was likely them that filled his ear with all sorts of hype about immigrants invading the United States. Why do you think these tweets, where do you think they came from?
Well, it's not a surprise that the president went back to its favorite punching bag, which is usually immigration and immigrants themselves. Oftentimes what we've seen, you know, time and time again, Sonali, is this, that the president tends to listen to the last person that had his ear. In this case, when we saw him getting together over Easter's reports came out where he had met with Stephen Miller, one of his senior advisors over there at the White House, who used to work for Jeff Sessions during his tenure over in the Senate, and also a very poisonous and very anti-immigrant figure that continues to advise the president when it comes down to immigration and any sort of other race relation matter. So to me, it's definitely not a surprise that at a time where people are celebrating and are, taking an extended weekend for one reason or another, that the president may go back to the subject. Especially, as you mentioned, not only because of the Mueller investigation, but I think that the president and the Republican Party are coming down with the realization that they may not be in power in Congress for much longer. We've seen a wave of seats being flipped from Republican to Democrats. It's an election year here in the United States, and the fuel against Donald Trump's policies continues to climb candidates in the special elections and potentially flipping the House of Representatives, which could amount to a very big trouble if the president is still hoping that he's going to get a dime or a cent for his border wall, his supercharged immigration deportation force, or any more detention beds inside immigration centers.
Let's try to make sense, even though it might be futile, of some of the things that he mentioned on Twitter on Saturday. One of the things that he talked about was caravans entering the country. He talked about Mexico has the absolute power not to let these large, quote, caravans of people enter their country. They must stop them at their northern border, which they can do because their border laws work, not allow them to pass through into our country, which has no effective border laws. What is he talking about?
Well, it seems that these comments are, from the president are coming out of a BuzzFeed report of a caravan that was, started through Central America, making its way to Mexico, and allegedly trying to reach the United States. And what the president is suggesting here is extremely troubling here. It's essentially insisting or inferring that the country of Mexico as a nation is not enforcing its immigration laws, something that is entirely false. While this caravan did proceed and it was comprised of over 1,000 people, if I'm not mistaken, this is essentially an exercise, again, from the president trying to exaggerate, reality in order to try to twist the arms or appear to twist the arms of the Mexican government into action. As is my understanding, the Washington Post has reported as of Tuesday morning that this caravan has in fact been stopped by Mexican authorities at its at, w within the nation. Some of the people within the caravan are being screened, and some may receive some sort of humanitarian stay within the nation of Mexico. But it's yet to be determined how the president's going to react to this. Of course, we all remember, to some degree or another, the humanitarian crisis that happened at the southern border here in the United States and in Mexico with, hundreds of migrant children were fleeing from gang violence and seeking refuge here in the United States. And I'm thinking that the president may be trying to allure that this may be the same exact situation, or which may be even more troubling now that his now that we've seen what his agenda may be like in terms of immigration, that his attorney general, Jeff Sessions, takes action and try to inject himself and use whatever powers of the executive. And along with urging Congress to be more tougher on border laws, to try and insinuate that the people who are seeking asylum in this country should not even present themselves at the border and make this claim, something that is completely legal and ought to be considered as part of the laws of our current nation. That means that these people in this caravan, should they reach the southern border and they claim that they have a valid fear of returning to their home country and they want to present a claim for asylum, that case ought to be considered on an individual basis at the border, and these people should get a fair treatment and a fair, reasonable claim in order to defend their case here in the United States.
Let's talk about the other aspect of his tweets on Saturday, where he basically just, didn't mince words and said DACA is dead because the Democrats didn't care or act, and now everyone wants to get onto the DACA bandwagon. Several things here. First of all, he's saying DACA is dead, but is it? Isn't it still tied up in courts?
I will venture to say that the program, in and of itself, is in its entirety, as it's known, it's in fact dead. The president of the United States, Donald Trump, killed the DACA program outright in September 5th of 2017. Now, what you may be referring to, or what the people of the country may be hearing from the news, is that the program continues. The program is still in what I may deem, you know, hospice. It's on life support, basically, thanks in part largely to two injunctions filed by federal judges out of the Ninth Circuit in California and the Second Circuit in New York, stating that the president didn't follow protocol when, you know, canceling these programs, which allows people like myself to renew our DACA benefits. That means a two-year deferral from deportation. That means a driver's license and a work permit. Unfortunately, though, and this is where the dead part comes into this DACA argument and what the president is alluding to, is that there's no new applications being considered for this program as of right now. So what the president continues to misconstrue is this notion that he essentially didn't kill the program, which he did, and that in some way, shape, or form, based on recent comments, that he has the best interest of the DACA kids and the DACA population in his heart. By the president saying that the program is dead and that a deal cannot be reached, we're in clear understanding of two things, and two things only. Number one, he is completely unaware of what his actions the consequences of his own real actions. And number two, that he lacks a complete understanding, right? And this gets to the second part of this tweet, of people trying to benefit of this program.
Right. He's saying everyone wants to get onto the DACA bandwagon, almost implying that there's hordes of people coming across from Mexico to become DACA registrants here.
Exactly. And that's the most troubling part. And again, I cite back to, you know, what Greg Sargent over at the Washington Post recorded earlier this week, which was essentially that, you know, we should be troubled entirely as a nation that the old president of the United States completely misses the mark on a program that he himself canceled with his own hands, but at the same time fails to understand the minutiae of it. For those who may be unaware, people that qualify for DACA have to have been residing in the United States before the age of 16 and prior to the year 2007.
So nobody entering the country now is eligible for DACA,
exactly,
even if that program had still been allowed to remain in effect?
Even if the program was still accepting new applicants, the caravan that the president is alluding to will be completely unqualified for this program, essentially because the program demands that not only will you be present in the day that the program was announced back in June of 2012, that you have been residing in the country before 2007 and arrived to the United States at the age of 16, you also have to present a number. And I mean, I've done this a number of times, and I got to tell you, the amount of evidence that you have to present to the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services to prove your continuous residence in the United States is quite extensive. Imagine having to print every bank statement that you've ever had for five consecutive years. That's a lot of paper that you have to submit to the federal government to just prove that you are worthy of being a candidate, a DACA recipient.
So let's also want to talk about the fact that these issues around immigration came to Trump while he was at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida and was meeting with several Fox News employees or correspondents for Fox News. The media is supposed to cover presidents, cover people in power, not influence people in power directly. I mean, we're sure the media is supposed to educate and influence and can influence all of us when we're watching it, but have members of the media literally directly meet with the president and influence his policies, influence his perspectives on these issues. That is certainly not what we see happening normally, but I suppose these are just not normal times.
Absolutely, they're definitely not. If you look at what essentially the president said, just to draw a comparison, is that the Democrats, you know, killed DACA, you know, and, you know, in comparison to what the media's role in the Trump administration may be, you know, the president tends to, you know, blast or tweet a lot about, you know, the so-called fake news. That means outlets that he deems unfavorably to him. But he has no problem meeting or granting interviews to outlets that cover him, quote unquote, fairly. You know, you're the president of the United States. You have access to, you know, all kinds of classified information. You can call nation leaders and they'll pick up the phone just for you. you're able to do some amazing things with that position and, you know, drive the world and the nation forward. And instead, you choose to take advice from Fox and Friends, TV hosts, news pundits. I can't, you know, begin to essentially highlight how troubling this is, but also I wanted to point out something that the Daily Beast reported on about how the president is so confident in some of these relationships. And I want to make sure that we put names, you know, faces to the names here, you know, that the Daily Beast has a piece about how comfortable the president is with a certain individual by the name of Lou Dobbs, who used to be a commentator, a pundit over at CNN until a large campaign pressured him out. Now he has a business program over at Fox News, where
he was basically too racist for CNN.
Exactly.
And it was a grassroots activism that pushed him off of CNN. CNN didn't sort of voluntarily do this.
Yeah. Thank you for lifting that up. It was absolutely, you know, that was the case. And, you know, now Lou Dobbs is essentially being put on speakerphone over at the White House. You got to understand the ramification of this. You know, when the policy advisors, you know, are being essentially sidelined in favor for news anchors and people from the media who essentially may tell the president that if he says X, Y, or C, his ratings will be better, or that the media may react in a completely different sense. You know, I got to tell you, if President Obama or any other president for that matter had done this, they would have found themselves in boiling water and potentially, you know, in the way to impeachment. And now we're seeing, you know, in these very troubled times, as you classified it, you know, the president of the United States taking advice, you know, from members of the media and proving once again this pay-to-play argument where people are being courted at a paid Trump enterprise like Mar-a-Lago to essentially have access to the president of the United States and therefore potentially have his ear and influence him on different and a variety of different matters.
By the way, in an upcoming program on our show, we are going to be covering Sinclair Broadcasting's influence on giving talking points to thousands, hundreds of local news TV networks and TV stations around the country in our program. Let's talk about another part of his tweet over the weekend, the immigration-related tweets. Juan, Trump said, Congress must immediately pass border legislation, use nuclear option if necessary to stop the massive inflow of drugs and people. What is this nuclear option?
Nuclear option is essentially a term referred to essentially the Senate foregoing its traditional procedure or regular order. It means that essentially the tool known as the 60 vote mark that is required to be a threshold for impending legislation to actually be approved by a majority of the Senate ought to be waived, and instead a simple majority, a 50+1 rule, which the Republicans and I can actually clear with their slim majority in the Senate, will be essentially the new threshold in order to which enact legislation through that body.
And to build the border wall and to pass funding for the border wall, et cetera. That's what he wants to do.
Exactly. So he wants to forego the Democratic Party altogether and regular order in order to exercise his anti-immigrant agenda and get funding for that wall or the supercharged deportation force. Mm.
And of course, the Republicans were the ones who never let the Democrats do this one. The Democrats were the majority in the Senate. So let's also talk about the fact that in referring to DACA and immigration, Trump focuses entirely on Mexico. But what's really interesting, going back to the issue on DACA, is that the DACA registrants are not primarily from Mexico. You're Venezuelan, right, by the way?
Right. Yeah, so, that's one of the top 10 countries in there, yeah.
Right. So even among the Latin American registrants of DACA, Mexico isn't, you know, the only country where DACA registrants come from. And we never hear anything mentioned about Asian immigrants or immigrants from many other parts of the world that are also, that were also able to take advantage of the DACA program under Obama, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's an article that's been published, I think, again, earlier this week on the Cleveland Registry, essentially stating that, you know, Congolese immigrants are becoming the new face of the diversity of the fabric in the community out there in Cleveland. And it's curious to me because you're right. When the media or traditional outlets essentially speak out on immigrants, it's often portrayed to the lens through the Mexican immigrant or the border. We rarely hear about the stories of Venezuelans potentially being deported back to a country with hyperinflation and one of the most dangerous murder rates in the world. So for your viewers and for everybody out there, you got to make sure that these stories, whenever you come across them, whether you're just in your community or in state media, that those stories are also highlighted. And I challenge, reporters on the mainstream as well to pick up these stories, because it's incredible, what people are able to do just for a chance to pursue the American dream in this country. So, whether it's Asian American communities in Virginia or newfound African American communities out there in Ohio, these stories are just as important as the ones that we may see, just coming from Central America or Mexico as a whole as well.
Finally, Trump has gotten into a battle, of course, with the state of California, where we are located, over the issue of immigration. He was very upset about California Governor Jerry Brown pardoning several immigrants over the past few days. And this whole idea that immigrants are akin to criminals is one that he has very successfully used to whip up anti-immigrant frenzy among his base that resents the presence of immigrants, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I got to tell you, and my hat off to you, to your great state of California out there. It's continuously acted as Trump's arch nemesis time and time again, specifically in the subject of immigration and on climate. But, I can't help but think that if a Republican governor pardoned five, say, Dreamers or five immigrants, for good conduct or for whatever the case may be, Trump will probably call them great people who deserve a chance of living the American dream. But because it's Governor Jerry Brown, he's using yet again the backdrop of a lawsuit that his administration unveiled against the state house, against the governor, against the leaders of both the Senate and the House out there in your state legislature, to use it again as a reminder to people that California, for some reason, in his head, is this wild, wild west where immigration laws are not enforcement and they're completely laxed, when it's a state in and of itself voting time and time again in support of these measures that essentially favor going after dangerous criminals instead of fathers and mothers who are dropping off their children at school, good, hardworking students who are trying to make a better future for themselves, and hardworking people who want to make sure that they not only improve their way of living and pick up themselves by the bootstraps, but want to improve their community and their state as a whole. So it's no surprise to me that, unfortunately, the president is choosing once again to make California a lightning rod for these attacks,
right?
Because he essentially goes against everything that California is choosing to do.
Well, Juan, I want to thank you as always for joining us today, and I'm sure we'll have you back on in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
My guest has been Juan Escalante, Communications Manager with America's Voice. He's a DACA recipient and the immigration correspondent for our program. We've been discussing Trump's recent bizarre pronouncements on immigration, including his call on Tuesday for the U.S. military to guard the southern border with Mexico. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.